Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Remember, you can join our Blogging the Stimulus Bill project with Steve Call from The New Yorker and the New America Foundation. He is reading every line of the 400-plus page stimulus bill and blogging the whole thing. We're going to participate as a group with him on the energy section. We thought this would be really interesting. Energy is, you know, such an important part of America's future, part of the change that President Obama is trying to bring about on a bigger picture basis, as well as in the stimulus plan. So we have put a link on our website to the PDF of the stimulus bill. And what we want you to do, if you're interested, is go to page 92 of that PDF where the energy section starts. And it's about 10 or 15 pages, not overly long. It's big print, wide margins. You know, it's a piece of legislation the way they write those things. So go to page 92 and read the energy section of the stimulus bill. Post any comments or observations about it, and we will talk about it with Steve Call when he comes back on the show next week. Just go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you'll see the link and all the instructions. Now, chances are you grew up thinking that one day you would fall in love and get married. And when you did, a big part of that commitment would be monogamy. But what happens if you find out, after you walk down the aisle and started a family, that monogamy just isn't right for you, and yet you didn't want to get divorced? Well, my next guest faced that challenge. She is writer Jenny Block, and she talks about this in her book called Open, Love, Sex, and Life in an Open Marriage. She also writes a column called Sex Talk with Jenny Block for the Dallas Morning News publication Quick. Jenny Block, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Didn't open relationships go out with the AIDS epidemic? One commentator on our website wrote, what is this, 1976? This is so Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice.
Well, first I want to say that that open relationships are different from swinging relationships, or at least swingers' relationships are different from open marriages, in that open marriages, at least my own, for example, I only have one other sexual partner. But also that thing about the sexually transmitted diseases, that argument makes me very nervous, just because, you know, folks who have affairs that their partners don't know about and then come home and have unprotected sex with their spouses are at much higher risk than folks who are in open marriages and say, hey, who else were you with? Were you careful with them? Do we need to be careful at home now? I always compare it to the difference between using a butter knife and a steak knife. When you're using a steak knife, you are extra careful, and people in open marriages are in steak knife marriages.
Tell us more about how you came to this for yourself.
Well, it was certainly circuitous, I'll tell you that. When I got married, I did indeed think it would be, you know, Prince Charming and Cinderella and Happily Ever After. And about 3 years into our marriage, I had an affair with another woman, which I eventually ended up confessing to my husband, and that was horrible for everyone involved. And for the next 3 years, I just tried to be, you know, the perfect wife. And also started doing some research about what that meant to be the perfect wife. That is, what the history of marriage was and what marriage has meant and continues to mean and hopes to mean in the future. And I was amazed at what I found about the fact that, you know, marriage as we know it now, what we now call traditional marriage, is only about 100 years old. And before that, it was all marriage of business, you know, join Kingdom A to Kingdom B. So this whole idea of monogamy and you complete me is all relatively new, you know, considering the length of time of when the universe began. So I went to my husband and said, you know, all of that, basically. I said, you know, have you ever really thought about this and why we're monogamous and have we chosen monogamy and what does monogamy and sex mean to our relationship? And after he told me that he thought I was crazy, as he often does when I have these, you know, these philosophical discussions or come up with these ideas, we really started to talk about it. We started to realize that, you know, at least for us, that monogamy was not the core of our relationship. There was so much more involved in sex and monogamy, and then it was something we wanted to test out.
And so did he have other partners too?
Well, he had one. He has had one other partner since we opened our relationship. When we first decided to experiment with this, we both had the same girlfriend. And then after the three of us were, you know, had been together for a while, the two of them were together. And it was such a fascinating sort of, I hate to say, use this word, but experiment. You know, as a writer, one often lives one's life and watches oneself live that life.
Yeah.
It was amazing to watch us as individuals and as a couple and, you know, the three of us as people and how all the things that should have happened, you know, we should have exploded, we should have hated each other and been jealous, we should never speak to each other again. And instead, none of that happened. It was like, what? How would you live life if no one told you how you had to live your life?
So we can take some calls for Jenny Block on this. Is she the only polyamorist in the group right now? Are you in an open marriage? If so, what have been your biggest challenges? And did your open marriage last? Or do you just have a question for her and her book, Open? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post a comment on our website by going to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And here's a comment from our website for you. Whoops, wait a minute. My computer monitor just flashed out there. Although people get into polyamory with good intentions, this says, I have only seen it bring out the worst in people. In college, I knew a lot of people who were into this, and there was always an underdog who got less time with their primary partner. No matter what people, people were often furiously jealous, and some were using the altruistic idea of free love as a way to be sleazy and hit on everyone. It takes a lot of work to maintain just one healthy marriage. How on earth can someone honestly manage more than that, asks Anne from Manhattan.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's unfortunate, but it seems as if we always compare the worst of open relationships with the best of marriages. You know, any kind of relationships between human beings, you risk hurt feelings and broken relationships and all that jazz. So, you know, it's funny in a country where you have a 50% divorce rate, and I don't even want to quote what sort of rate of affairs, anywhere from, I don't know, 30 to 80%, that we still consider this sort of at least the most close to perfect we have of an institution. This is a hard thing to do. It's hard to have any kind of relationship with other human beings, but I find it easier to pursue happiness and fulfillment than to live unhappy and unfulfilled. You know, it was hard to sort of sleepwalk and bumble along for me, and I knew there had to be something else. So, you know, all of my relationships are hard. It's hard to keep great family relationships. It's hard to have great friendships, but I wouldn't shy away from those because they're difficult. They just make me, you know, reinvest myself more. Mm-hmm. So I would be the first to say that I don't think these relationships are for everyone. And I will also be the first to say that I think monogamy is a fabulous thing. I think it's great for people who are actually monogamous to say, I would like to be monogamous with you. Great, I'd like to be monogamous too. And actually do that, to be honest with each other about their wants and needs and to stick to that. It's the only thing I take issue with in my relationship or anyone else's is dishonesty. That seems unfair all around.
So I think you have a kindred soul in Mike from New Jersey. Mike, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, thanks, Brian. All I got to say is, you know, if you're going to delve into either swinging or polyamory, you know, my wife and my best friend, and we, you know, been in the swinging lifestyle. And the most important thing is having an open, honest conversation. There's been times that it's been fabulous, and there's been times we've had terrible fights and arguments, but really we met a couple of great couples. We enjoy their company, and when you're comfortable with other people, there's absolutely no jealousy, although in the beginning there was a lot of unsureness, because when your partner brings something like this up, it's like brings up a lot of issues that you have to work through. But in the long run for us, it's been good for our marriage, but we don't center our marriage around it. However, for people who are polyamorous or in swinging, I think you have to come from having a very good relationship. And if you come from not having a strong relationship like anything else, it's not going to work out.
Mike,
being
open and honest. Mike, stay there for a second. Jenny, you said before that you differentiate between polyamory, your open marriage style, and swinging. What's the difference?
Well, and you know, this one of the biggest problems with all of this is that we don't have great language for it. We don't have words that we've all agreed on. I like to think of the open marriage being sort of the umbrella term, and under that can fall different relationship styles, one of which is swinging, which traditionally is more focused on the sex. People are interested in having additional sex partners. That can be together, that can be separately. Those can be with friends, they might be with strangers, they might be with people they see once or more than once, but they lay out those very specific rules based on wanting to be non-monogamous. In polyamorous relationships, the focus is certainly there's sex with other partners, but more often than not, well, no. Actually, I think that there has to be something else for it to be polyamorous, because that means more loves. Mm. You know, that means there is a love relationship with more than one person. So it isn't just the sex. There's something else as well.
Right. Because that's much more complicated.
People have more problems with the polyamory because, yeah. You know, it's one thing to have sex with someone else. It's another thing to be in love with someone else.
And Mike, is that what caused the arguments in your open marriage, whether you or your wife were getting attached emotionally to the other partners?
You know, Brian, it's interesting. That can come up. I think people have natural insecurity. But, you know, when you're in a lifestyle for a while, the truth is you want to spend time with people you like and care about rather than just strangers, because there's nothing to it when you're with strangers. And we just know that we're with each other, and mm-hmm. that's where our commitment is. So we try to leave that jealousy thing on the other side.
Mike, thank you for your call. Noel in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Noel.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Well, I definitely wanted to comment on the subject. I'm very interested in it as well. I've been married for about 3 years, and in the beginning of our relationship, we never really had a sexual connection, but we get along very well, and I saw past that, but during the relationship, I just said, I'm not satisfied. We're not coming to this. I need to outsource, shall I say, or supplement what I'm not getting. So I started another relationship, sexual to begin with. But it's very hard, like the other man said, to not get attached. And if you are doing an outside relationship, is it just casual sex?
Jenny, do you do advice?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I love that expression, outsource, because that's a great term. You know, in business, if there's something else you need, you don't ditch the rest of your company. You just outsource the other things that you need. It is difficult. It is difficult when you reach out there and you think, oh, no, what will happen? Could I fall in love with this person? Will I love them more? Will I want to leave my partner? But the thing is, whether you're polyamorous or not, you're always at that risk. I mean, unless you're going to stay at home locked in a closet with your partner, we have no idea what goes on in our partner's life during the rest of the day, the texts and the emails and the relationships at the office. So again, to the original point that this is all about being honest and flexible, and it's all scary. It's all scary. There are no
and that's exactly what we have in our relationship. We've always been very honest, and now I've been in this secondary relationship for 3 years, which has supplemented what I'm not getting from my primary relationship. But I'm really at a crossroads now. Do I go and get what I need fully in a relationship? Because for me, I'm a very sexually driven person, and it's very important. And that's also the connection and the intimacy, which I do feel that I'm missing. But on the other hand, with my primary partner, we get along very well. We have great communication. It's, you know, everything's there except for the sensual thing.
My concern is always when one thing's not leaving a primary relationship to go to the secondary one, is that secondary one will then become the primary one in terms of the things that you wanted more of. You know, like that's the whole grass is greener sort of argument. And my thought is if you're allowed to, you know, to graze in the other grass, you won't worry how much greener that might be. It's all the same grass. You know, primary partners leave shoes under the table and forget to pick up the dry cleaning and, you know, snore in the middle of the night. You know, it doesn't matter who that primary partner is in the end. So, you know, that question comes up all the time. You know, you have this other relationship that is very shiny. You know, even at 3 years, which I've been in my secondary relationship for 2.5 years now, and when I'm, you know, having a fight with my primary partner, I think, you know, well, I'm just going to leave because, you know, it'll be much better on the other side. And then I think, come on, let's be realistic here. Marriage is marriage. And for me, a monogamous marriage doesn't work. There's always going to be something additional.
No, so, Noel, thank you very much for your call and your story. Good luck with your relationships. And Jenny Block, author of the book Open, Love, Sex, and Life in an Open Marriage, is my guest for another few minutes here on WNYC. A few people are calling in to challenge what you said before about monogamous relationships, monogamous marriage only being like 100 years old, and pointing out that, of course, the Ten Commandments forbid adultery. So how old is it really? Did we lose you, Jenny?
I'm sorry, are you asking me how old?
Yes, I'm asking you, Jenny. Yeah, because you had said something before about monogamous marriage, the idea of it as we currently think of it only being 100 or so years old.
You know, I'm not a historian, so I'd be nervous to give you any, you know, much more than that, other than to say that it would be difficult to look in the Bible and say that there weren't kings with many wives. It'd be difficult to look in history books and see, you know, and not find kings who had many mistresses. So the concept of monogamous marriage, this setup that supposedly it's one man and one woman, that's been going on forever. But whether or not those marriages actually operated as monogamous relationships, I don't buy that that was the way the majority of them actually operated.
Paul and Paramus, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Yes. Jenny, good morning. First of all, I love the show. Question is, do you have children, number one? And number two, what was the reaction of friends and family when they understood what your lifestyle was all about? I'm curious as to know what their reaction was.
Sure. I have a daughter who's 10 who we provide whatever information she asks for and we're very honest with. She has not directly asked. I'm not sure she has connected all the dots between marriage and sex and relationships, and she doesn't see my girlfriend and I kiss or do anything in front of her that would make her go, huh, what the heck is going on here? And we plan to answer her questions as directly as we can when they come. I think I'm really, really, really lucky because my family has been fabulous. In fact, my dad outed us to our entire extended family at a wedding on a mobile phone call to me. You know,
that's lucky.
Coming out. It's about polyamory, her and her girlfriend, her husband. Yay! And I thought, oh, good grief. And everyone has just been wonderful. For me, and I think for them, the proof is in the pudding.
You use the term coming out. And one sociologist who has studied polyamory wrote an article about it entitled New Queers on the Block. So I wonder what you think about that title. Are polyamorous politically organizing in the same ways that gays and lesbians have?
I think so. We had, you know, we had the big poly day in Central Park, and we all spoke, and we had all these great people and performers. Yeah, absolutely. And I do absolutely consider myself part of the queer community, you know, and anyone sort of living outside of the very strict heterosexual monogamous, what we call the norm. I do think we're starting to organize only because, you know, people want to know there are other people like them. I've been fascinated how many emails I get and how many people join my Twitter and my Facebook because they, you know, they want to know that other people are out there and are doing this and doing it well.
Well, that is where we are going to leave it with Jenny Block. She is the author of Open, Love, Sex, and Life in an Open Marriage. And she writes the column Sex Talk with Jenny Block for the Dallas Morning News publication, Quick. By the way, your father's a rabbi, isn't he?
He is indeed. You should have him on the show sometime. He totally gets me in all of this, which is, again, I feel very lucky.
He didn't invest with Bernie Madoff, did he?
No, I don't think so.
A lot of rabbis got caught in that, unfortunately. Okay.
No, I'll have to ask you, but I don't think so.
Jenny, thanks.
I want to invite your listeners to find me at jennyonthepage.com if they're interested in, you know, emailing me or following up.
Jennyonthepage.com?
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks a lot for being Jenny on the radio today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Just want to give you an update on the Bernie Madoff goings-on. Before we go, he pleaded guilty this morning to his epic fraud. He got sentenced immediately to prison. He had his jail revoked. Cheering broke out in the courtroom when that was announced. The judge said, Judge Denny Chin said that he considered Madoff a flight risk because he would have the money and the incentive to go. And then Madoff actually spoke. He spoke steadily in court, according to the AP, as he addressed the judge. He said, I am actually grateful for this opportunity to publicly comment about my crimes, for which I am deeply sorry and ashamed. He said, as the years went by, I realized my risk, and this day would inevitably come. I cannot adequately express how sorry I am for my crimes. Bernie Madoff in court this morning, now behind bars. Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Kate Hines produced this program with Annie Schreffler, our Uncommon Economics Editor. Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. Intern help from Kira. I'm Brian Lehrer.